you know, we talk about town council this when the elections come about. There's no more important election than your local town local council, election. Local yeah. school committees, your local elections, because they're the ones making the decisions on how your tax dollars are spent, how your you know, your local tax dollars are spent. Mm-hmm. So I say to these people, please listen in and find out how and why we are spending the tax dollars on these specific items. So mm-hmm.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM and in the local Franklin Area Mass FM dial at 102.9, here for another town council quarterbacking session. There was a town council meeting on Wednesday, and we're here on a Friday. Oh, well, schedules change a little bit, but we're still going to do the condensation of, I think it was effectively a 2.5 hour meeting on Wednesday night. So thank you, Town Council Chair Tom Mercer, for joining us for this council quarterbacking session.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me. It was a good meeting the other night. A lot of discussion about some basically hot topics.
Yeah. So. Yeah. One has been talked of, although more directly in the last 2 years, but it started, what, 2007, 2008, something like that. And we'll get into more details. But so, yeah, we can start with promotions and recognitions. The police department came back with a couple more promotions and the one other new hire that they missed the last time around. So I think Chief Lynch was saying, you know, he may not come back until July, but you never know. So these are all good things that happen anyway.
We're just aware of a couple of retirements in July, so I think that's why he hit upon July. But Wednesday night, we did have a couple of promotions. The first one was a promotion to sergeant of Connor Crossman, who's been with us a number of years. The other is Detective Laura Canavan, who was promoted to detective. Again, who's been with us a number of years, and it's always great to have those recognitions come before the council and in front of the community, so the community can kind of put faces with some names. So it was great to have them there and their families to pin them. And then lastly, there was a new hire, Derek Mackey, who was unable to attend the last when they brought in the others two meetings ago, I think, or one meeting ago. Anyway, Derek was pinned by his family on Wednesday night. So all good stuff. And again, I always relate these to kind of the feel-good things that the council gets to be a part of. So it's great.
I'll go back and check my notes. But I think this was the first female detective promotion. I know we've done well in the last, 6 years or so, mm-hmm. hiring more females in the department. But this is, I think, the first one promoting into the detective role. So it's good to see them start moving up as well.
Yes, I would agree.
And then we got into the topic that we alluded to that's been around for a while, has come and gone. We certainly had done, and we collaborated in helping during 2019 and 2020, just before the shutdown. There was a series of community information sessions, including that one that Wednesday night, just before everything shut down 2 years ago, about the famous stormwater utility fee.
Yes. So,
it's here.
It is here. This is basically being approached, and it is a user fee. And basically, it's what you have on your property. It's dealing with the stormwater and Charles River issue. And, you know, we've had this issue before us for a number of years. We did, we actually did sue the EPA. Unfortunately, we lost, but we did get a little mitigation from that suit. But there's a fee that we have to take care of the stormwater that hits the catch basins and gets filtered into the Charles River. And really, what it amounts to is really phosphorus and trying to get make sure we mitigate the phosphorus. So with that being said, there's a fee to accomplish this goal. And it's been coming out of our budget up to this point. And it's $1 million. It's been $1 million. It's now $1.6 million, I think. That comes right out of that, right off the top in the DPW budget. And this fee is continuing to go up on an annual basis. So it came a time, and we've had many discussions about this. How do we handle it? Because we can't continue to take it from the town's budget. There's just to go around. And so we did, we had a lot of public hearings on this. We also had a lot of public discussion in the last couple of councils as we addressed it. And a year ago, we made the decision to put a utility in place which would allow us to collect that fee. And that's part of the MS4 agreement that we have to comply with. So with that being said, the basically what it amounts to is the pervious amount of pervious square footage that you have on your property. And a prime example is, or impervious, sorry, your driveway, if it's asphalt, your roof, a roof on a shed. And the way it's equated is we have taken whatever that square foot, total square footage is, and we've come up with a number of 1,000 square feet equals a unit.
Yeah, a building unit.
And then we take and associate a cost to the building unit. Now, in most cases, you know, the average home with an asphalt driveway is probably going to amount to about $70, $76, I think, a year. The billing unit is $18.66 is the number that we're putting in for that billing unit. And the average is $74.64 per year on an average 1 acre lot. On a half acre lot, you're probably looking at half of that, so 37, 32 per year. And again, that's based on, you know, two billable units or four billable units or 4,000 square feet of. There are credit opportunities that people can apply for. I guess, let me back up a half a step. So that's for the individual homes. If you look at some of the bigger landowners, you look at Dean College, you look at the Franklin Village Mall, you look at the Shaw's Market Mall, and you look at some of the industrial parks, and they have a lot of square footage.
Yep.
And their billing units are going to be substantial. But unfortunately, we really don't have an option unless the council were to decide to take it from public safety. Do you take the money from, because we have to pay the money. One way or another, we have to pay this fee. So you take it from police, you take it from fire, you take it from schools, you take it from DPW. It has to come from somewhere. And we're headed into some difficult budget times as we're moving forward here. So the council felt very strongly that there really wasn't the money in the budget to deal with this, other than, again, this is a real short summarization of a very long presentation, but we can take the next fiscal year, or the next, we're probably looking at the institution of this fee in FY24. So it's going to be 15 months before anyone feels or sees this fee on their tax bill. And what has allowed us to do that is, you know, there was nothing good about COVID, but there was ARPA stimulus money that we were granted. And we can use some of those funds for stormwater, clearly stated in the authorization that is one of the areas that we could use it for. Mm-hmm. So obviously we decided we might just as well. So we put money in to get us through the next 15 months. But as we all know, or as we are all hoping, that COVID is on its way out, and with COVID on its way out, so will the stimulus money and the ARPA money disappear. And then it comes back to, how do we pay for this fee? So
yeah, these expenses.
Yeah. And they're massive.
Well, and for those who at least have been following me since I started 15 years ago, I've been following this. And we have all seen in little implementations here and there, the introduction of the storm, the rain gardens, the implementation of the street narrowing, sidewalk renewals, tree wells. There's been a whole host of things that are all being done to mitigate effectively that stormwater runoff, which takes the phosphorus into the Charles. That's the root and cause of the whole stuff. All of these expenses have been, to your point, increasing over time. So 2007-08, whenever it started, you know, maybe it was a couple hundred dollars a year or whatever, but now it's $1 million, $1.5 million, and projecting to go to 2, 3, 4, 5, and our budget can't sustain that growth. So the implementation of this user-based fee, based upon the billing units, as you've explained, will give us a way to help the implementation, right? So the other point to make, clearly it was an unfunded mandate from the state, from the federal government. We sued, and while we didn't win, we did win some mitigations. Bottom line, it still will cost us something, so we continue to pay it out of our ops budget, or by you implementing the utility fee, bringing some equality and equity to that sharing process, Now it relieves pressures from the ops budget, so we can still do what we need to do. And it also gives some incentive to the individual. So I spoke up at the council as well, because I've been hearing about, you know, the driveway and approved pavers. My driveway is asphalt. I'm going to need to replace it at some point. If I can get some approved pavers, then that also gives me an additional abatement. I already have a rain barrel. And if you don't have a rain barrel, there'll be a link in the notes. You can get a rain barrel. And that's one of the opportunities for abatements. And then certainly some of the bigger and new construction, we've all seen, like the Big Y has been talked of, and it's been used in a number of the presentations about where they've put that stormwater catch basin stuff in underneath their parking lot. Those will all be giving those locations, those owners, property owners, abatements as well. And then there at least is an incentive. And at some point in time, whether the Village Mall, Dean, or whatever, they'll now have an incentive that instead of paying the flat fee, they can implement something, and it may cost something, but over time, that's really going to be their choice. And over time, we at least get to help the budget. Because I think the other piece that was, you know, we fought the EPA and lost. I think Quincy was the community given as an example. Yes. They're not doing enough. And oh, by the way, they're now under a mandate and a court order in order to spend X amount of money. We don't want that. Do that. Obviously, we want to spend as much as we can on our time. So
absolutely. And obviously, the government, the federal government, as well as the state, look at this and the EPA. They look at what you're doing. And as long as you are moving forward with addressing these mandates, they're probably not going to give you too bad a time. But in Quincy's case, they were doing nothing. And now they got fined heavily. And on top of that, they were given a time frame that they had to complete the work. And we don't ever want to get into that situation.
No.
And there are many, as you stated, Steve, there are many opportunities for partial abatements. And you stated the rain barrel is one, and the pavers is another. Gravel driveways, rain gardens, dry well, French drains, rain garden, bioretention areas, retention basins, sediment forebays, deep sump of leaching catch basins, tree wells. So there are many options for at least partial abatements for residential as well as commercial and large residential credits. So, and people should go on to the website, and I'm sure you'll put a link in this where they can go and see the presentation, see the full presentation, as well as the summarized presentation that was given to us. And it's certainly everything you ever wanted to know about stormwater, didn't want to ask.
And now the more and more of the details, including the videos of the early information sessions, we'll put those in the show notes as well. And clearly there's much more details that are in place, still some to be refined. So exactly what that paver brick that I'll be able to use still remains to be determined, but I'm waiting for that answer. I know it'll come because they've committed to do so. So that'll be good. And then, it's still a bit away. So it gives us time to plan to include that in the budgets and on the commercial industrial planning and nonprofits as well. The other key piece to make sure we don't overskip over it is there's also that affordability key piece as well. So if people are qualifying already for other income-based reductions, they're also eligible for this. So they either pay little or nothing compared to their income eligibility requirements.
Absolutely. And one of the other things, just to give the community an idea of some of the things that this money goes towards, is, for example, leaf pickup. Leaves are probably the number one thing that drops phosphorus into stormwater. So with our leaf, our yard waste pickup, these are the kinds of things, that's one of the things that we've done. Drainage improvements, flood mitigation, roadway safety, healthy waterways. These are all different things that we get, that we're trying to do to help mitigate some of the phosphorus that we are theoretically dumping into the Charles River.
Yeah. So. And I started seeing the street sweeper because it's the seasonal time. That's one of the things that was mentioned. We're going to need to do more of that more frequently. But people will remember back to the fall where our vendor, unfortunately, was unable because of COVID circumstances to come around and do the yard waste pickup, which created a bunch of controversy at first until the DPW added additional hours at Beaver Street to allow for people. But then they still had to pick it up and bring it. With the leaf pickup, from what I understand, and details and time schedules are still to be worked, they'll be able to pick up the leaves in front of our houses. So that'll be a good benefit coming forward for sure.
Absolutely. You just have to get them to a pile. Not in your backyard, not in
Yeah, not on the front somewhere. The Indeed. And then one of the other good pieces, at least, but still... under the circumstances, we have our capital plan. It had gone through the FinCom, the capital budget subcommittee looked at it for over a couple of meetings. The capital plan effectively was approved. So we get to spend from both the free cash that's been allocated, and then in the utility fee sections, stormwater and sewer, not stormwater, excuse me, water and sewer, retained earnings were also approved for capital expenses.
Exactly. And, you know, again, we capital subcommittee that was led by or that is led by Councilor Pellegrini met with finance, met with the department heads, and came to the council with the recommended FY22 capital plan. And basically, what we're looking at is, you know, an OPEB contribution, my favorite subject.
Yeah.
OPEB contribution of $447,000. Turf field stabilization, which is something we continue to try and do on an annual basis so we don't get a big hit.
Right.
When it's time to replace a turf field of $150,000, property budgets and facility stabilization account, the open space. These are a couple that we did at zero, basically, because they're kind of going to be going through the Community Preservation Committee, those kinds of things. School and technology, $60,000. Math and social studies curriculum on the school department side was $500,000. Food service, $81,000. A special ed van of $55,000. We did have a major issue at the Horace Mann School and the courtyard drainage, and that's about $400,000. Then we approved the senior center outdoor pavilion. That was $100,000. And then a fire department expenditure of $340,000, basically municipal fire alarm system upgrade, emergency response vehicle, portable radios, structural firefighter clothing, police department, $350,000 for replacement of police vehicles, electronic weapons, phasers, public works, $500,000 for street acceptances, the Veterans Memorial Restoration, downtown community improvements, $50,000 vehicles and equipment, roughly 400,000. And, you know, water main replacement, vehicle equipment. I mean, there's a substantial list, but you can go onto the website and it shows, it will show you each and every dollar where the entire capital expenditure for FY 22 will be spent.
Yeah, and to add to that, I think we got an update during the meeting that, for example, the senior center gazebo cover screenage area is actually going to get built by Tri-County, which was good news. I know it had been in the works, but they just hadn't officially confirmed it, et cetera. But that happened during the meeting, so that was good news.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, the total recommended amount was $5,391,000. I don't think I stated the final total.
Yeah, and again,
Of that comes from free cash.
Some from the retained earnings, yeah.
Yeah, retained earnings, water retained earnings, and sewer retained earnings. Let's see, water was 2.3, I think, and sewer was $1 million, and the free cash was the remaining balance of $2 million. So,
yeah, and just while we have the opportunity in a couple of minutes, the retained earnings are effectively the functional equivalent of kind of the free cash. So in our operating budget, if we don't spend everything or we get more revenues than we anticipated, that becomes free cash, which the state validates. And then we use that for our capital plan. Because we've got the storm, the sewer utility and the water utility and the trash and solid waste utility, each of those are fee-based programs by which we also have a fiscal policy to maintain a minimum of $1 million in there. And this retained earnings are the amounts above $1 million that we then use for the capital improvements as required. So it's still user-generated fees that are funding the capital improvements, but with each of those specific areas. And I mention that now because as we do go forward in setting up the stormwater fee utility fee, something similar will be happening in those cases as well. So we'll take an X amount of fees. As we move those ops expenses to the stormwater utility, they'll get paid out of there. Over time, the fee will also allow us to fund capital pieces. And yeah, I think there was one of the other questions that we didn't cover earlier, but we can address now. The fee is calculated on a regular basis. So it won't necessarily always go up. I think the solid waste is one where clearly over time, and when we introduced in 2010, the single stream, it was 300. Yeah. And we dropped it down to, I want to say 200 or something like that. Yeah. It's come up a little bit since then, but you know.
Yeah, it does. It will fluctuate up and down, you know, and we'd be, you know, to be factual, obviously, as the costs of this mandate, I don't think is going to decrease. So, you know, chances are it's going to be a minimal increase on the, you know, in time.
Yeah. So, and while the ARPA and whatever other grants come through like that can help mitigate. There's always a grant opportunity, and I know the DPW in particular has been very aggressive in going after and frankly winning a lot of those grants as well, so that'll continue to help.
The DPW does all of our departments do a great job in applying for, you know, every grant that's out there, because you never know where you might fit in the one, and, you know, all that can do is help, and in certain cases, that, as in the ARPA situation with the ARPA funds, we're able to fund a large portion of the stormwater this year because of that grant. So,
and then we'll also put a plug in because the town administrator included the link into the preliminary FY23 budget model forecast initial view, which you specifically also addressed at the joint budget meeting, the first of the formal new introduction of that committee the week prior. So you can talk a little bit more about that. And it's really the start of the budget cycle from an ops perspective.
Absolutely. And again, it is certainly the very beginning of the budget process. I shouldn't say the very beginning. Our department heads, both.
They've been working behind the scenes.
They've been working behind the scenes for the last 4 or 5 months, putting together their parts of the budget. And, you know, obviously, Jamie and the municipal department's heads have been working to put the municipal part of the budget together, as Dr. Ahern and the school committee and principals and administrative team have been working the last 4 or 5, 6 months in putting the school department part of the budget together. So this is basically the first look at it by the council. It was presented to the joint budget subcommittee last week, which is made up of the subcommittees from our three key boards when it comes to finances, which are obviously the town council, the school committee, and the finance committee. So there's representation, all individual board subcommittees of those three meet as a joint budget subcommittee. We started as 8 or 9 years ago, and that's, in my opinion, one of the best things we ever did, was getting that group together and being able to get answers to questions before you get to the public hearing part of the budget process. So this is the first pass at it. Obviously, in April, the finance committee will be meeting, and I would say to the entire community, if you have interest in the budget and what money is being spent on, listen in to the finance committee, because they look at every single line in the municipal part of the budget, as well as the school part of the budget. Mm-hmm. And it's really the only time that you go through every single line item of both parts of the budget in one session, or in multiple sessions, but in front of one group. Yep. So that's where a lot of decisions and adjustments may or may not be made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly FinCom, to reinforce that point, and we've talked about it certainly in prior years, but FinCom spreads their budget hearings over 4 nights to enable that true deep dive into all the administrative budgets, the DPW on a single night, schools on a single night, and so forth. And then respectfully, the town council spreads the budget hearing over 2 nights, but effectively you just get to, quote, ask questions or raise a question on specific lines. It's not everybody all at once getting into the greater details. So, but the other point too is that, to reinforce, well, you don't have to ask every question because, oh, by the way, between the joint budget subcommittee and the FinCom 4 hearings, those questions should have already been asked. It would be some other things that, obviously, over time, things can continue to develop, you know. Absolutely. So between the FinCom hearings in April and your hearings in May, something else may still have happened. So what else is new?
For sure. But there's many opportunities to learn a lot about the budget. And I just would say to our residents, please tune in. Watch it. It's so easy now with Franklin TV and the live streaming, as well as the Zoom meetings. Mm-hmm. There's many opportunities to learn about what your tax dollars are being spent on. And I always say, for an individual or for a family, there's no more important process. You know, we talk about town council. This when the elections come about. There's no more important election than your local town local council, election. Local yeah. school committees, your local elections, because they're the ones making the decisions on how your tax dollars are spent, how your your local tax dollars are spent. Mm-hmm. So I say to these people, please listen in and find out how and why we are spending the tax dollars on these specific items. So mm-hmm.
yeah,
and my plug for it's my plug for listening to what can be very boring, and I get that, but very informative informational meetings.
Yeah, and I think to reinforce that as well, the other opportunity respectfully is also to get involved with the Franklin for All, which would help us determine what potential changes we could make or should make in the downtown zoning, which affects how we live, how we work, how we play, how we eat, how we drive, et cetera. So the opportunity for, you know, citizen and resident engagement clearly is out there between the budget, the Franklin for All. There's opportunities for engagement. Get involved, find out what's going on. There's a survey specifically on the Franklin for All that's open through April 1. That you can help determine what Franklin's future should be. And I think we've talked from time to time, and I think Melanie Hamlin mentioned it again, 2028 is our 250th anniversary. Yes. What do we want Franklin to look like in 2028? You know, that's only 6 years away now. So,
yeah, for sure. So
lots to do. Indeed. Well, thank you for taking time today to recap the town council meeting. Hopefully folks will be able to get a better understanding, get that little incentive to participate, to listen, actively participate if needed, and become informed. So thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me once again.
And indeed. And just a reminder to the folks, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.